We've all heard about the General Motors ignition switch fiasco, blamed for at least 13 deaths and dozens of car accidents. So far, GM CEO Mary Barra has dismissed 15 employees over the delayed recall. But as her predecessor Dan Akerson told the Detroit News last week, the defective ignition switch was a clarion call for change within the company. I'm Lester Graham, and for Cynthia Canty. On today's Stateside, the long process of repairing GM's flawed corporate culture from the inside out. But first, a week from today, August 5th, it's primary election day in Michigan. Lately, I've been reading, well, not just about who's on the ballot, but who is not on the ballot, and about the mediocrity of some of those candidates. Joining me now are Nolan Finley, the editorial page editor at Detroit News, and Jack Lessenberry, Michigan Radio's political analyst. Hi, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Hi.
Nolan, I was reading you're not impressed with some or maybe many of those who are running for the state legislature and Congress. What's your concern?
Well, you know, we do this, go through this process every couple of years where we send out questionnaires and interview candidates as we try to determine who we're going to endorse, who we're going to support in the elections. And it just struck me as I was doing these interviews and looking at their answers to the questionnaires that we really aren't sending the best and brightest to our capitals, whether it's Lansing or Washington. I mean, we tend to think of Congress as this elite institution, and we treat the Congress people as if they're something very special. And you start sitting down and talking to the people who are running for the office, and even to the people who will ultimately win, and there's is a great deal of mediocrity.
Do you think that's really new? I mean, I've met some members of Congress. I thought, wow, maybe you should have stayed as a wrestling coach at a high school.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's been going on for a long time. I think it's particularly acute in our state now. I think our leadership pool is as shallow as it's ever been. I would blame term limits for much of it. I think we don't give some of our promising lawmakers a chance to develop into something more special.
Jack, you recently talked about people who are not running. Why bring up people who aren't on the ballot?
Well, I think it's sort of an indication of what Nolan said, that there's a lot of strong people out there and who don't want the aggravation. And frankly, it's hard to blame them. As Nolan said, term limits mean, for example, you can be a state legislator for a maximum of 6 years in the state house, 8 in the Senate. And the sums that are being spent these days are frankly crazy. A state legislator makes a $71,000-something a year. In my own state Senate district, one of the challengers, in fact, a woman who's an underdog, has already spent more than $200,000 for trying to win a term. And plus that, if you're running for any office, the higher the office, the more the chances are that if you wet your pants in the third grade, someone's going to find out about it and talk about it. And a lot of people just don't want that aggravation.
You know, you both brought up term limits. I've thought redistricting and term limits both contribute to the reluctance of people to run for office because the political extremes at each end of the spectrum, the fact that just about the time an elected legislator really understands the complexities of running state government, they're forced out. I'm wondering if you think those two combine to really put off people. Nolan?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think definitely term limits do, and I think, as Jack said, the cost, both in terms of your reputation and your wallet, to run for these offices, you really got to do it. I mean, I talked to Dave Trott, who has been a very successful CEO, used to high-level decision-making, and accustomed to, when he wants something done, getting it done. And I asked him, I said, I just can't see how you're going to be happy going to Washington and working with 435 other people in one of the most dysfunctional committees in the world where nothing ever gets done. You know, people have these grand ideas. I want to make a difference. I want to change. And the reality is so little is getting done today. So little is getting changed because of the dysfunction of our institutions.
I'm wondering what you think about the redistricting part of that.
Well, I don't really see how redistricting plays into folks not wanting to step up and run for office or the more competent people wanting to step up and run for office. I think the fact that once you are elected, it's such a frustrating position to be in, and people look and they see that and they wonder, why do I want to be a part of this process?
And that I disagree a bit with Nolan, because I think redistricting in many cases means that good people, for example, I live in a state Senate district that is solidly and overwhelmingly Democratic. Are there some good Republicans here, some Republicans with ideas? Sure. Would they run for the state legislature? Not unless they're crazy or have some masochistic complex, because no Republican could win in this district. Now, if you live in Holland, Michigan, say, you could be Franklin D. Roosevelt, you could be the brightest, you could be John F. Kennedy, and you have no chance of being elected as a Democrat. So I think that also sort of factors people out. We should have more swing districts, and I think it would make both parties better, just the way Japanese competition, like it or not, made American cars better.
Jack, I think, you know, what you might be saying is we're seeing people farther and farther at the ends of the political spectrum because of redistricting. I mean, is that the problem?
Well, you said that's part of the problem, and I neglected to say that. What you have is people in primaries running who are, you know, tend to, they're trying to get the most excitable voters out. Most people don't vote in primaries. If we get a 25% turnout next week, it'll exceed expectations, and people who are so sort of more ideologically committed come out. Sometimes you get sort of very left-wing or very labor-oriented people, more than the average voter in Democratic districts. In a place like, remembered Congressman Joe Schwartz, great military record, endorsed by President Bush, lost to a sort of proto-Tea Party guy in the Republican primary for Congress a few years ago. So, yeah, I think that's a big factor, too.
Nolan, you wrote that the hope is we'll pick a candidate who will rise to the position, will grow in stature, maturity, and pragmatism. But it's a crapshoot. Why do you say that?
It is. Well, because you look at particularly some of our congressional candidates this time for some of these open seats, and I wouldn't describe hardly any of them as being, you know, top of their game, being ready. I mean, we endorsed in the Detroit district to replace Peters. We endorsed Rudy Hobbs, a promising young lawmaker, but I would have preferred if he had, you know, 8-10 more years under his belt and a lot more experience. I think he would have been had a little more confidence and been a little more self-assured going into Congress. If he does win, then he will now.
I think Rudy Hobbs is a good example. I think I may think he's a little stronger than Nolan does. But one other problem is, you look, Mike Rogers, whether you share his politics or not, is a very intelligent, very capable, hardworking member of Congress. He's leaving Congress to go be host of a radio talk show. Now, that may say something about you know, what his career path is going to be, but it also says something, I think, about the culture of Washington. I can't imagine 20, 30, 40 years ago, it would have been a Saturday Night Live parody, somebody giving up a powerful position in Congress to be the host of a talk show, but that's what he's doing.
I read a recent Macomb Politics blog by Chad Selesky. He says voters don't have much to choose from because many incumbents are not being challenged. And he says it's about too much money, the huge amount of time needed on the campaign trail, and just how nasty these campaigns are getting. I'm wondering if you agree with that point.
Well, yeah, I think that touches on everything we've been talking about. It's just not we haven't created a very attractive environment for our candidates and for the people who have a lot of other options. You know, look around and say, why do this?
Jack?
You know, I think that's exactly right. I was just thinking, journalists generally don't run for office. When they do, they lose, and they probably shouldn't. But if you take a man like Nolan Finley or my wretched self, let's say, you know, if we decided to retire in a few years, we would be probably excellent state legislators in a lot of ways, only from the standpoint that we know a lot of stuff. We talked about these issues. We're probably vastly more informed than the average state legislator. But we wouldn't do that. First of all, we're poor journalists. And I don't know about Nolan, but I have a constitutional inability to ask people to give me money. And I think that's true in a lot of other walks of life. I think there are a lot of people out there who could be tapped for very useful service who, because of the nature of the process, what it's become, are never going to think about doing that.
What's it going to take to recruit smart people who really care about governing for the betterment of all citizens of Michigan? Nolan?
I don't know, but to Jack's point, I'd only run if all the skeletons in my closet could register and vote.
I'd win by a landslide.
So how are we going to recruit good people under the rules that we have?
We got to recruit them. We got to vote for them. And I think there's a responsibility here we haven't talked about much, and that is on the electorate to recognize good, competent people, not be swayed so much by these ridiculous campaigns that are being run today. I've been watching the ads in the Senate race. You got two decent people running for Senate, and you would think that you've got Jack the Ripper and Attila the Hun on the ballot here. The way these ads, every ad, it sets out to destroy somebody's reputation, and that's just absurd. And what's more absurd is that we respond to it. And so, you have to put responsibility on the voters too.
I think that voters could do, it's sort of odd to be hectoring people about what to do, but if you look at both in Detroit News and Detroit editorial page in the last 2 days, I think the News on Saturday, Free Press on Sunday, has sort of thoughtful endorsements of the various candidates, and they sort of explained their thinking. I didn't agree with either paper on all of them, but you can see where they're coming from, and they sort of give reasons. And I think if you educate yourself, and the good thing about the internet is there are more places to find out information about the candidates than ever. There's websites like Publius and Ballotpedia. And, if you're complaining about it, go out, learn something about the various candidates, educate yourself, and talk to your neighbors.
Jack Lesenberry is Michigan Radio's political analyst, and Nolan Finley is the editorial page editor at the Detroit News. Thanks for your insights, guys.
Thank you.
Have a good one.